Welcome into The Install, episode 4 with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Buck Rising, happy to be along for the ride. Greg, great to see you back for another episode. I'm excited to get into the Titans defense today.
I'm sure they're excited to get into it as well, since it was not one of the better units in the league a year ago. And I don't think I'm really saying anything out of school right there. What do you think, Buck?
I think that might be the biggest understatement of anything you've said about football so far this year. They were atrocious by any stretch of the imagination in any category that you look out outside a turnover differential. And this is the thing that Mike Vrabel and now the defensive coordinator Shane Bowen have received the most criticism for by far.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to be, you know, funny or sarcastic, but without going into tactics, there's obviously two parts of pass defense: rushing the quarterback and coverage. And they were not good at either one. And if you're not good at either one, you're really going to have a hard time in pass defense. And that's what this league is about on the defensive side of the ball: preventing explosives, preventing chunk plays. And they did not do a particularly good job of that.
Measures that they've taken to try and correct in the offseason with a little bit of retooling of personnel, which we'll get into with Greg over the course of today's show. But I want to start with Vrabel and by extension, Shane Bowen.
Yeah,
Greg, because Vrabel has been around the league for many years at this point as a position coach, as a D coordinator for a year, and now as the head coach for the Titans in year four. When you look at Mike Vrabel's defenses historically, what kind of comes across as his MO?
Well, despite all his time with Bill Belichick as a player, I don't think he does a lot of what Bill does. What Belichick did a lot of was multiple front looks. Now, the Titans do some of that, but if you look back to a year ago, and obviously Dean Pease was not there a year ago, so it was more Mike's approach, I guess, with input from Shane Bowen, who's now officially the DC. You know, they did a lot of what I would call a 5-2 front. I guess people think of it as 3-4, but it's really five across and two stack backers. Now, we're speaking about the base defense, Buck.
Right.
And what they would do at times is they would make it a 4-3 look, where they would drop Harold Landry from an on-the-ball position in a 5-2 front to an off-the-ball position as a stack player, and they'd create a 4-3 front. And now that's where the multiple front look comes into play, because the way they would align the defensive lineman with their hand on the ground was different in the 5-2 look and in the 4-3 look. So that was predominantly what they did with their fronts in a year ago. Now, again, because they're coming off a season in which the defense was not very good, and you're there, I'm not, so I can't speak to what's been going on through the first week of training camp. And even through that, you just don't know until they start playing real games.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if they'll mess around with that. I don't know if they'll try to have different looks. You know, when you start moving people around, you have to feel very good about their mental approach to the game, because the one thing about moving people around is it changes gap assignments. And one of the things I've learned through the years, both watching tape and talking to defensive coaches, is that the large majority of big runs in this league don't result from great blocking as much as they result from the defense not playing with a proper gap integrity and gap discipline. So if you're going to start playing with multiple fronts, you have to be real certain that your players understand how that impacts their gap assignments.
And there was nothing certain about the Titans on defense last year. I mean, and there was a great many reasons for that, right? You have a first-year play caller coming in as uncertain an offseason as any that we've had, having to adapt his teaching style on the fly from an all-virtual offseason, and really speaking to us, a collective media, yesterday, saying that this is the first opportunity that he's had the chance, Shane Bowen, to get to know guys on across the defense rather than just spending time with the outside linebackers, given that he was still a position coach last year. When you talk about the changing that they do up front, when they do things like dropping Harold Landry, who is, by to this point, has been their best pass rusher even though he does not jump off the screen statistically. There are great plays there. He was clearly somebody coming out of Boston College that had great talent. When they do that with Harold, though, where they move him from on the ball to off the ball, what I guess is the strategy in that? Because I know that drives the fan base nuts, Greg.
Well, they do that in their base. They're not doing that on third and long.
Right.
They do that in their base defense. And again, it's just to give a certain look here. So the fan base doesn't go crazy. You know what team does that a lot? The Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know who they move off the ball? TJ Watt.
Right.
And they're pretty good on defense. So this is what teams sometimes do in base to give different front looks. So, you know, my guess is because the Steelers are really good on defense that the fan base in Pittsburgh isn't saying, oh, my God, that this coaching staff are idiots because they moved TJ Watt from an on the ball to an off the ball alignment. There's a lot of 5-2 teams, 5-2 front teams that will try to create 4-3 front looks by moving an edge player, often a good pass rusher, off the ball into a stacked position. That's not uncommon. And like I said, that's not what they do when they want to rush the quarterback. When they want to rush the quarterback out of their nickel or their dime, Harold Landry will be an on-the-ball edge pass rusher.
Right, and that's the thing. I think we're so locally focused sometimes, and certainly Titans fans are, that they're not studying defenses across the league to see that that's fairly commonplace. They just know that their coach is dropping what they think is their best pass rusher into coverage in places where they think that they know better.
And by the way, Bud Dupree came from Pittsburgh, and oftentimes he dropped as the stacked backer as well. So he has experience in that role playing off the ball. So I think you'll continue to see that because most teams want to be multiple with their front looks. They don't want to just line up, you know, unless you've got four all pros across the board or three all pros, whatever. And certainly that's not necessarily the case right now with the Titans. You're trying to show the offense different looks in your base because the way teams block versus the run is based on the defensive front they're playing against. So you're trying to give them different looks.
And we've talked about what the coaching staff has done against teams like the Baltimore Ravens in the various playoff runs that this franchise has made, how they've found ways to have success on defense, despite I think last year was a clear talent disparity up front that did not allow them to get pressure on the quarterback and made everything look worse as a result. Schematically, though, Greg, what do you watch from them last year and say, okay, this is the thing that went most wrong for the Titans in 2020?
Well, as I said, and I wasn't trying to be sarcastic.
No.
Their biggest issue was in the passing game because they could not rush the quarterback and they didn't cover particularly well. And my sense is if we're going to try to look ahead a little bit, Buck, because that's obviously where we are now, because they made meaningful changes on the defensive side of the ball. So we have to look at what they've done. They obviously signed Janoris Jenkins, who I guess, is he going by Jackrabbit now? Is that the deal?
Greg, he's straight up on the team's official website as Jackrabbit Jenkins. Like, I don't know who he paid, but he got the web designer to go with it.
All right. So we'll be nice to him and we'll call him Jackrabbit Jenkins.
Good.
But he's been predominantly a man-to-man corner in his career. And our good buddy Coach McGinnis knows him extremely well from their time together with the Rams. And I know Coach Mack has always loved the swagger with which he plays, his competitiveness, his feistiness. He's a man-to-man corner. They drafted Caleb Farley. Now, he may not be ready just yet. I know he just started practicing a couple of days ago, but the assumption, I assume, is he'll be ready week one, right? I mean, he's on track.
That is what they are. They have not said it publicly, timelines, but that's what they're anticipating.
Right. So let's assume, look, he was a first round pick. So let's assume he's the guy. He was drafted. He obviously was drafted in the low 20s, but he probably would have been a top 12 pick if he was totally healthy.
For sure.
So to me, based on his tape study from 2 years ago at Va Tech, I see him as a much better press man corner than his own corner. So in my view, they have two quality press man corners. And I think that given that, you'd probably like to see them play a lot more press man. I think that's the goal here. And, you know, very often, you know, the league has different trends, obviously. some might say you're seeing teams play more what we call cover four, which is a zone coverage. But I think you have to have the ability to play press man, because teams also, what they do a lot more of on offense is what we call quick game, three-step drops, quick five-step drops, where the ball comes out and the pass rush can't get there. So, Buck, if you can't disrupt the quarterback, who do you have to disrupt? The receivers.
Right.
And you don't disrupt the receivers playing off coverage zone. So you have to, at some point, be able to play press man. And my sense is, based on the signing of Jenkins and the drafting of Farley, and even Christian Fulton, who, you know, I know he's working in the slot now, but let's assume that he's sort of the third corner on the outside, or even starts the year opposite Jenkins, depending on Farley's situation. He comes from LSU. He has a big press man background as well. So they've got press man corners. So I believe you'll see a lot more of that.
And that was something that they strayed away from or
yeah,
tried to avoid at all costs.
They didn't have the people to do that.
Right. Yeah. And so that was because, again, speaking from the perspective of Titans fans asking what's happening with their defense when they see Malcolm Butler and that at that time Jonathan Joseph playing 7 or 8 yards off the wide receiver, it's completely foreign to them, not understanding that they simply just didn't have the horses to keep up.
No, and so you have to play to your personnel and try to compensate for and camouflage, I don't want to necessarily say weaknesses, but limitations, let's use that word, because you obviously do not want to put your players in situations where you don't feel they can execute well. You know, that's what coaches do. They try to maximize the strengths and minimize the limitations. You know, now, obviously, much in the secondary can be compensated for if you could rush the quarterback, which we know they did not do particularly well a year ago. And so they're trying to get better in that area, too. Obviously, they brought in Bud Dupree. You know, he'll be an outside rusher. My assumption would be that when they're in their nickel and dime, that the two outside rushers will be Landry and Dupree, and that Simmons will be on the inside with Autry. Simmons, I think, is still an emerging player. I think he can become a really good player. Denico Autry, a year ago in Indianapolis, played on the outside in their base and then moved inside next to DeForest Buckner in their nickel. So he has experience playing inside at D tackle in a sub front. So my guess is you'll see Autry and Simmons on the inside in the sub fronts.
And playing to those strengths is something that the Titans defensive staff started off doing with Jeffrey Simmons when they still had Jadeveon Clowney at their disposal. Despite lack of personal impact himself, he was able to attract attention away from Jeffrey Simmons and allow them to scheme those one-on-one matchups. Certainly that's the approach that they're taking with their upgraded talent up front.
Yeah, and then the issue becomes what they do with Rashawn Evans, because Rashawn Evans over the last couple of years, when they go to their dime, six DBs, he's often been used as a pass rusher. And it'll be interesting to see if they keep doing that or if they feel they're good enough with their down four. Because look, defense, all football is a numbers game, Buck. You would love to rush four and be able to pressure the quarterback. Why? Because then you have seven in coverage against five eligibles. And so you have the numbers. If you can't rush the quarterback with four, you have to add a fifth. Because when all's said and done, Buck, you've got to speed up the quarterback. If the quarterback is comfortable and does not feel as if he has to speed up, then he sits in the pocket and he can make throws. And pretty much every NFL quarterback, if they feel comfortable in the pocket, is going to make throws. So in an ideal world, would you love to be able to rush the quarterback with Landry and Dupree on the outside and Simmons and Autry on the inside? Sure. But if you can't do that, you've got to add a fifth.
Yeah. And that's the way that they've been deploying Rashawn Evans in certain situations to try and generate that pass rush. Now, we've talked about Rashawn before and the differences in the way that they use him as opposed to a Darius Leonard or a Fred Warner, a couple of guys who just got contract extensions here recently. I guess, Greg, I know that there are a great many ways that they can use his ability, his athletic ability to affect the game, but where, I guess, are you seeing him struggle the most in the way that they use him?
Well, he's used differently than those other players.
Right.
Obviously, in the base defense, he's a stacked backer. And that's what, you know, Leonard is. That's what Warner is. That's what DeMario Davis is. You know, the top three down linebackers in the league in their team's base defense are stack backers for the most part. The difference is that Evans, over the last number of years, when you start going to sub defenses, and particularly the dime, which they played well over 25% of their defensive snaps a year ago, he's essentially been used as a pass rusher, which is different than the way Leonard's used and Warner's used, Bobby Wagner's used. I mean, yeah, do these guys rush the quarterback once in a while? Sure they do, because every team has blitz packages. But Evans has been predominantly used, Buck, as a pass rusher. So he's been used differently. So it's really, you're comparing apples to oranges. You know, he's just, the way he's deployed has been different.
Right. And that's what ultimately I'm trying to avoid, is the comparison, because I think that's where people get too caught up in those comparisons without really understanding the nuances of how these guys are used.
I mean, to me, Evans, look, we know that he's highly athletic. He went to Alabama as an edge pass rusher. He got moved to linebacker at Alabama. So, and was used at Alabama, by the way, as a pass rusher when they went to their sub packages on third down. So that's what he's done most of his career. So he became a stacked linebacker in college. He didn't grow up as a stacked linebacker.
Yeah. With the new parts in the secondary, they had come into this training camp before Kevin Johnson, the former first round pick, retired, with four new corners, having all but detonated the existing group because of the issues that you're talking about, just in pass coverage in general, outside of what they were able to do in not affecting the quarterback. Caleb Farley, we've discussed a little bit, and I watched him with Coach Mack, what was that, Monday, his first practice, Greg, because Mack obviously has a defensive background and was keyed in on him in his first practice, having watched him a little bit previously before he was rolled out there in front of the media.
Right.
The thing that I from my untrained eye, Greg, and just watching him through 3 days, the thing that makes him so uncommon among the rest of the group is the length, but not just the length, the ability to move at that size in a way. His hip movement is so fluid. He looks so graceful out on the field. He moves like a much smaller human being.
No, he's about 6'2". He's close to 200 pounds. You know, that's one of the things I noticed when I had evaluated him with his 2019 tape, that he's so solidly built, but he has powerful and explosive movement traits to go along with that build. You know, he's got a really strong combination, Buck, of size, patience, and athleticism. I mean, he's got everything you look for as a corner, because you're right, at 6'2", he's got length, but he's solid, even though he's not 210 or 215. I know he weighed 197 in his pro day, so let's say he's around 200, but he's a solidly built guy. He looks solid. You know, I think that there's a physical element to his game. There's a physical presence to his game. He's prototypical. Again, without knowing when he'll be 100% ready, but if he can stay healthy and the back doesn't become an issue, yeah, I think he has the traits to be a really strong corner in this league.
And they're managing him. They're managing Julio Jones. They're managing all of these guys right now to try and make sure that they could preserve the health first and foremost of this team. Because given that they do have a few of these situations, Dupree, Julio leaving practice a couple of days ago with an injury and now playing the more cautious game with him. Now they've hedged their bets a little bit if event that Caleb Farley is not ready to go at the start of the season, with Elijah Molden, who they took out of Washington in the third round. Now I've heard your colleague Lewis Riddick at ESPN sing his praises many times over, so much so that I went back and watched some of Washington's games. What I was able to see, because obviously the Pac-12 having a bit of a weird season last year, but the guy just pops on film in the slot.
Well, they only played four games last year, so I went back to 2019 as well. I love Elijah Molden's tape. The only thing to me that he truly lacks is straight line speed. And he was beaten several times on vertical routes from the slot in 2020. But I think that Elijah Molden is just a really good player. He's sudden. He's explosive. I think he's got really good slot corner traits. I think he can play man. I think he can play press man. I think he can be physical. You know, he's not big in terms of height, but he is competitive. He's really, again, he's a feisty kind of player. He can blitz well. Don't forget, if you play in the slot, there's a lot of things you have to be able to do. The other parts of the slot corner paradigm, besides coverage, is defending the run and being used as a blitzer. And he can do both of those really well. I think he checks all the boxes to play slot corner. And, you know, I think there's just a swagger to him that you really like on your defense. Now, the other thing about him is he played meaningful snaps at safety last year for UW. And you could almost see him a little bit in the Tyrann Mathieu mold. Now, Matthew's a great, great player. So I'm talking about the way in which he can be deployed.
Sure.
I'm not saying as we speak today, he's Tyrann Mathieu.
Oh, Greg, the aggregators are already typing. They're already typing.
I'm sure. I'm sure. But I think that he almost has sort of that hybrid slot corner safety skill set that if you felt that, let's say in your dime, you'd rather play him at safety, I think you could do that and you'd be okay.
And he'll certainly be deployed a variety of different ways, given that they have a few shuffling parts at safety as well. Amani Hooker filling into that role and started a few games for Kenny Vaccaro last year when he was dealing with a bit of a mystery illness. That is something that we've seen so far at training camp. And the two of them together, Greg, they've really shown.
You mean Hooker and Molden?
Hooker and Molden, both together running first team reps, have really, really impressed. The energy of this defense feels completely different. It's 2 days of padded practice.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to grade on a curve.
Hooker's always struck me, even going back to his tape at Iowa. He's not a great physical athletic guy, but his game is built on recognition, understanding, savvy, just knowing where to be, understands what he's looking at. I always just felt that he played, you know, we always talk about quarterbacks, you know, just seeing things. Hooker's one of those guys to me that sees things. And I think Molden is very much the same way.
So I want to go back to something you said in your analysis of Farley when you're describing him as a patient player. And that's not necessarily, I think, a trait that jumps to the top of people's minds when they talk about the corner position. Why is patience important for a corner?
Well, it's important in press man for this reason. Because you want to wait for the unless you're going to jam him, which, you know, obviously, if you're going to jam him, you're going to be proactive and you're going to jam him right off the ball. But when you play what we call mirror match press man, which what that means is you allow the receiver to declare his release and then you react to it. And you need patience for that. You don't want to waste any steps. You don't want to get yourself off balance. And I thought he did a really good job of playing with patience when I watched his tape from 2019. Because as I said, that's what's called mirror match press man. The absolute master of playing mirror match press man was Champ Bailey. Now I'm not gonna sit here and compare Farley to Champ Bailey, but there's a patience that goes with that. So you stay on balance, you play with body control, you let the receiver declare, and then you essentially get in his hip pocket.
The defense is going to be probably the biggest storyline for this team all year long, given all the efforts that they made in a bit of futility last year and the improvements that they've tried to make to this defense to get it right. And it seems as long as they can not be like the Indianapolis Colts who are dropping like flies right now, Greg, they should be in a pretty good position.
Well, again, look, you know, they scored more than 30 points a game a year ago. We know they have Julio. It's a very good possibility they'll score over 30 again, or right there. You know, contrary to popular belief, they're not going to score on every possession. But if they can score over 30, you know, if you can do that in this league, you know, now we have a 17-game schedule. If they can average 30 points a game again, you've got to win 13, 14 games. You've got to. You can't score 30 points a game and go 9-8. You can't do that. That means your defense is really bad. And, you'd like to think, with the additions that they've made, that the defense will be better, but you just don't know until you start. Look, they have a very intriguing opening game matchup, and that's at home, correct?
Yes, that is that's the home opener.
That's Arizona, and they're probably going to get a lot of four wide receiver looks. They're going to get, and we'll discuss this in far more detail, obviously, leading up to that, Buck, but they're going to get a lot of four wide receiver looks. They're going to get a quarterback that can run. You know, they're going to play a team that's very challenging tactically week one.
Yeah, it's a fascinating matchup, and certainly one of the best in the league. DeAndre Hopkins will be putting this new secondary to the test. That will do it, though, for this particular episode of The Install. Greg has watched a ton of Ryan Tannehill, so that's what we're going to get into next week. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Leave us a nice rating. It would make Greg very happy in the Apple Podcast reviews. Greg, I appreciate you making us smarter each and every week that we do this. And we have a preseason football game tomorrow. It's going to be very exciting. I'm excited for the preseason.
Is that tomorrow?
You're right. It's on our doorstep.
Wow. You know, it was a shame the way it happened, but it was, you know, with last year, there were no preseason games. And for some reason, I don't think I minded that terribly, but hey, we're back to preseason football.
It's okay. I'm gonna all but snort the preseason football. I'm gonna have a hard time staying away from it. I'll talk to you next week, buddy.
All right, thanks, Buck.